HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast. The weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hey guys, how's it going? It's a tough time right now for a lot of people. Those recovering from COVID, those who've lost someone to it, and others who are caregivers now, having gone through about themselves. And everywhere you see, people are asking others to stay positive, even bordering on toxic positivity in some cases. So how do you rule that out? By understanding what makes you happy and embracing it, like our HD Brunch cover star and Emmy nominee actor Shefali Shah has with painting. In a chat with Shruti Nair from Team HD Brunch, Shefali talks about how painting helps her stay positive in these trying times and discovering her passion and pursuing it with classes in Spain.
So basically, when did you start painting? I mean, I've read it, but still, it will be better if it's in your words.
Kids were very inclined to art. And in their school, they had really, really good art faculty. So at the age of 3 and 4, they were learning about world art and, you know, ways of it. And it was just the way they were taught. It was really beautiful. So I wanted them to pursue it. And I found this other art teacher, Harshit, came by recommendation. And I went to her, and she didn't normally teach little kids. I mean, Ariman Maurya, what, 6, 7, or maybe, yeah, little younger than that, probably. And I took her to them, and she said, yeah, I'll take them on. And she was great fun. I mean, they had a real bond with her. And yet again, she was not just teaching them what we get taught in, you know, like in my time school, there used to be the elementary exam, and there was that intermediate exam, etc. She taught them in a more hands-on, practical way, taught them about world art. They, you know, talked about painters across the globe. So it was very, very interesting. So I requested her and I said, can I join? She said, okay, on to. And I joined her. We became very close friends. And that's where it all started. I mean, I used to paint as a child.
Right.
But even when I was in school, I am creatively inclined towards all arts, but I don't stuck format to it because I just stifled. You know, so if somebody tells me sit in a chair and do a still life, maybe I'll do it now. Then it didn't make any sense to me. But so I started learning with her, made a couple of paintings with her, and then she got married and left Bombay.
When was this? How old or like what year was this?
Ariman Maurya must have been, what, 6, 7? So that was, I mean, they're 19 and 18 right now.
Okay.
So
13 years ago. Yeah.
Then she left. She got married and she left. And I still wanted to continue. But she, you know, already introduced me to something that I love.
Right.
So it was about with paints and playing with canvas and playing with a sketch pen or this. Then on, I found out about this art residency in Bandra, which was called The Last Ship. It was run by this called Julius McQuan, and I joined that residency. So it was a couple of students, you know, we'd spend the whole day there. There was one teacher, and meanwhile, we could do what we wanted to in the gap. It was very interesting, you know, it was really interesting. Small little bungalow kind of a thing, not even a bungalow, where we could do our stuff. We could interact with each other, have lunch together on the table. It was really sweet. And then again, that kind of shut down. And I was just doing from the YouTube tutorials. While, of course, work was going on intermittently, it's not like I wanted to, I could put all focus into it. And then after a couple of years, and after that, I just started, I mean, I don't know what to mean, but I just wouldn't stop. And, you know, I like making big artworks.
Right. Yeah.
So I started doing that. And then I decided that I want to pursue this. And I went, I found this art school in Barcelona. It was not an art school of Barcelona. I applied to an art school in Barcelona, art residency. It was called Metafora. And it was just amazing. And I mean, I'm not a student of art. I don't know my work really well. So I was going there completely as a raw canvas, to say so. I was anxious. I was very, very concerned and worried. I was going to a new country and I didn't know the language. I didn't have a house to stay in. I didn't know anything about the place. So I just landed up there. It was a 3 or 4 month course. I mean, normally the Euphora, you can do a year's course as well, or you can do 2 years as well. Mm-hmm. But they give you the luck of setting it up, or if you just want to do 3 months, stuff like that.
Right, okay.
And it is easily one of the best decisions or one of the best things I did for myself in life. It, you know, not just in reference to painting or art, but just the experience was amazing. This was an art residency. It was like this old, small warehouse kind of place, all painted white. There were students from all over the world. There were various tutors who taught you different kinds of art. You know, whether it was carpentry or just lots of stuff like molding or mosaic or painting or photography or, you know, whatever, performance. Yeah. And yeah, and you were allowed to choose your classes. Oh. And there was art history that taught. We were allowed to choose what we wanted to do. And then there were some compulsory classes.
Right, like an elective.
Yeah, like an elective. Now, after elective, the elective would last for, let's say, a week or so. And then we had to do something as an assignment for what we learned. If I've chosen carpentry, then by the end of the week, I have to present something.
Right.
And by the end of the 4 months, everything you've learned, you just decide on what piece of art you want to put in.
Right.
That went as a final assignment. And then at the end of it, there would be an exhibition. And, you know, we'd call people from outside and curators or painters or, you know, people who like art. And it would be a warehouse. The Metafora would be open to everyone for people to come in. And there were students from all across the globe. I was new. Some of them had been there for very, very long.
Oh.
So, God, they like me. They won't like me. They are all friends, they're a group, I'm the outsider, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know whether what I'm saying is the right thing or no.
Yeah.
So, all of that. And of course, being away from home, you know.
I was actually going to ask you that. Tell me a little bit of your apprehensions. It's not easy to like, just pick up the courage and do, you know, I mean, it's easier said than done to actually apply, go and study at a particular age. Though we want to break those barriers, but it usually does Yeah.
It's not, believe me, it was a nose dive I took. And I questioned all throughout that what was I thinking. Also, I was very clear about one thing, Shruti, that, you know, I never had the opportunity to go to university and go abroad and study.
Yeah.
And I was going to study something I really loved. And I was on shaky ground because, like I said, I didn't know my job. I didn't know it. I mean, that's exactly why I was going to learn.
Yeah.
I didn't know how the country, like Barcelona, functioned. I did not know the language. I did not know how to commute. And I was very sure of one thing, that if I'm going there as a student, I want to live there as a student.
Hmm. Yeah.
But I don't want to have my car and whatever.
Yeah,
I want to know how I run, what is my budgeting, etc., etc. Yeah. And I just, the best thing I did for myself. So once I went there, I stayed in a hotel, which was very, like, it seemed okay on the net, but it was really scary and it was far away from all these places. And then I started looking for an apartment. So I went like around 4 or 5 days before the school started. And I started looking for apartments. And this place where I was staying in was really far away from school. Yes. So I looking at apartments I wanted to stay in because it would obviously work out cheaper if I rented a place.
Yeah.
I was clear that I did not want an apartment in a, you know, in a concrete jungle. Mm. I was something in the Gothic quarters.
Right.
I decided that I will not take cabs. It's very expensive. So I found this house just perfect. It was in the Gothic quarters. It was overlooking the square. And, you know, whenever they had an event or anything, the square would be full of, like, it was just amazing. And there was this, like, official building right in front of my house. They would have weddings and I would just sit in my balcony and watch it. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Like, you know, they have this festival of where they give books to each other.
Yeah.
And the whole square would be full of these book vendors. And just like Sunday, I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh my God, what is going on? And there is suddenly there are all these people dressed in a masquerade. And it was just amazing. And I was 30 seconds walk from the cathedral, which I could see. Like three cathedrals chime at different times of the day. It was just the best ever. You know, it was beautiful. And I, like, it was walking distance from the station.
Right.
So I'd figure how to get to the station where my school was. So I'd walk in the morning to the station, carry my huge backpack, sometimes carry lunch. For myself and for others, because everybody loves Indian food.
Yeah. And
go there, take a train. And so there was like this time that train comes. It's just amazing, you know, how you function.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You just tend to forget the joys of these small things. You know, because you had the luxury to pamper you to, okay, I don't need to take a train or I don't need to, you know.
Yeah.
So that you start recognizing, okay, this person travels in the tube exactly the same time that I do. And go to the place where I was studying and go there, spend the whole day there. Like we'd be there from morning. I could be there by around, I think, 8:45. And from then till around 7 o'clock, we were in school and doing various stuff and hanging around and between, chatting, having lunch, going back into classes. I have to confess, a lot of times I passed out. I used to sleep in the art history. I used to just sleep. Choose to sit behind and I'm like, yeah.
You were a backbencher for that class?
I was like, oh. And you know, also a lot of the tutors, some were Spanish, one was German. So understanding the accent was like, what?
Oh, totally. So did you take Spanish classes like before going?
No, I wanted to. I really wanted, but I did not and I should. Hmm. Like, you know, I planned. I said, I want to do salsa classes. And they have some really interesting stuff. You know, they have these groups over the weekends, which I'm sure in Bombay also are there. Then why don't you just come be a salsa dance and you pay for your drinks or dinner and just hang or cooking or whatever. But also what happened is my kids, they were in Spain. They were 1.5 hour away from me. They were in Salon. So on the weekends, they'd come to me because they had the Saturday, Sunday. Morning and they'd go back Sunday evening. So a lot of that with them, which was great because meeting them outside of our comfort zone is a different
feeling. True.
And the connect somehow. Like here they won't, I have to fight over, please help in the kitchen. But they just knew that, okay, mom's cooked or, you know, we'll help her cook or somebody has to clean, and they would squabble about, I'm going to do the tables, I'm not going to wash the dishes. And it was really sweet. It was really nice. I would go to their academy.
Right.
So they were, they had blocked off a section in the resort. The academy had, there was a resort there. And, you know, every kid had this little was like a little cottage kind of a thing.
Right.
But there were three boys sharing it with a little kitchenette, etc. Okay. So if I went there, then I would book one of those cottages for myself.
Okay.
And cook for all the boys of the academy. Maurya would be like, mom has, you know, the boys would be like, mom has come. Okay, we are coming for dinner. I remember one evening I was just cooking and two of the coaches walked in and they said, you were cooking. I said, yeah, I'm cooking. And by the evening, without knowing how many people, I would just have a full house of these bunch of all across the globe again. And I used to fire them. Like, I was very clear about that. I'm not the very nice auntie kind of a thing. So I would eat if you wash the dishes. That is my deal. I refuse wash dishes. So, you know, and it's really lovely. They would be playing music and they would be hanging around. And it was a small little compact place, but it was just so love and laughter and just having all these boys and the coaches would drop in and it was really lovely.
That's so nice it worked out for you that way, you know, because I was going to ask you the same thing, like as a mother, how difficult was it to stay away from your kids?
Because it worked out well because one, my kids were there. I mean, they actually think I picked Barcelona because they were in Spain. But that seemed like the best. I did a study of what other schools' options I had. And I thought this was great. Mm-hmm. And they have been away from home at a pretty young age.
Okay.
Because they were both football players. So they left home at a very young age.
Yeah.
So even not in Barcelona, I would have been there and, you know, I would have continued and pursued what I was doing.
So, when did they leave for Spain? You said they went pretty young.
First, they've gone to the US. Didn't work out. They were there for almost, they were very, very young when they went. They must have been 9, 10.
They passed their education over there. That's what
education and they were football players.
Right.
And, then they went to Spain, I think, when they were around, 14, 15?
So tell me, like, obviously you've lived your student life and it was quite cool, as you just said. But what after coming back, did you come with this entire perspective that probably you want to do? Like, did you know that you're going to sell your artworks and create, like, have an alternate career possibly? Did you ever think of
that? No. Actually, I don't know how people make a career out of painting because you never really know whether you're going to ever sell in life, you know. So, like, Van Gogh sold all his paintings after he died, which is really tragic. But I didn't think of it as an alternate career. I just thought of it as a mode of expression for myself. I wasn't working on films or anything when this came in, and that was one of the reasons I said, 1 minute, I need to express myself. I need to do something creatively, and I want to do something that doesn't depend on being offered work.
Right.
And I loved it. And for me, Shruti, the journey is always far more enriching. Like even in a film, you know, people are waiting for the final product. Of course, even I want to watch it, but I never think of going to happen of this film, or where will it be seen, or who will see it, will it be like, not like, will we win awards? I don't go into all that. It doesn't, that's not my purpose. The journey of creating it, I cannot tell you the joy I get out of it. I cannot tell you, just being on a set, creating it, working on the script, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, aim for this. It was not about what I will do after this.
Right.
This was too beautiful to become an agenda.
Right, yeah.
It was just something I did because I felt like most of the things I do, almost all the things I do is because I feel like it comes from the heart, I do it. And my thing is, if it's come today in my heart, then I have to do it.
Right.
You know, so that's calculation. There is no calculation. Oh, what would be, what can we do with this? What are the, I don't go there. I'm not even plan my career like that.
Mm-hmm.
Once back, I continued painting. Then incidentally, someone put me across to somebody and they saw my work and they wanted me to be a part of a group exhibition, which was held by Art for Concern. And it was at the Jahangir. And just the thought that my canvas would hang on a wall of Jahangir was huge for me. Not more I think I'm going to sell. I was just so excited that it's going to be on that wall, you know. And people wasn't here, mom, dad, me, and my sister, and my other two close friends, we went for it. And it sold. And I was like, are you serious? Why? Who? God. I mean, it was like, but the thing is, honestly, for me, the fact that it would be on the walls of Jahangir was like, I could actually enter that place, not just as a viewer, but as a participant, was huge. And for that, I had checked at the Jahangir. So we girls have my closest friends, our date night is going to Kulaba Causeway.
Okay.
Buying rubbish, the stupid trinkets or chappal from the street.
Oh.
Love it. Love it. And then we go to Mondigar, have our beers and have dinner. That whole thing. So once we see, it's that event for us.
Yeah.
One day we decided, chalo, let's start from a little earlier. Let's also go to Jahangir and, you know, just walk the streets.
Right.
So I remember crossing it and I went in. I said, 1 minute, wait. I went in to ask that if I want to apply for an exhibition, what is the waiting? They said 2 to 3 years. Nice. The waiting at Jahangir. So I was like, okay, I'm sorry. And I just left, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just a big deal that it was even put there.
Yeah. Probably was meant to be. Like, it just came to you. You didn't have to go for it. That itself is a big thing, right?
Yeah. I don't even remember how it happened. Who runs the Art for Concern, Anjana, she's now a dear friend.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, she came, saw my work, and she said, this one we will take for the exhibition. Then after that, somebody from Pune reached out to me. I don't even know how all this happened. I really don't. But she reached out to me. She had a gallery, a beautiful gallery in Pune, and said that we would like to host your exhibition. But it wasn't like one after the other. There were long gaps in between.
Right.
And, you know, had the exhibition there. It was a super flop. Nobody came.
Oh, shit.
Nobody came. I felt very... And I was not expecting to sell. I really wasn't expecting to sell.
Yeah, but viewers.
I'm an amateur. I don't know. And honestly, art is very subjective.
True.
And I have a very long way to go. I mean, I am conscious and, I question even when I go to work on a set.
Coming from an Emmy award-winning artist, okay.
I am every day... just terrified. My biggest fear is I will, and the director will say action, and I won't know what to do. It's a big fear. So there was never this thing of, you know, I'm going to put up an exhibition and people are going to buy my. I don't live in such false hopes unless it happens.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out. And then that was that. And very recently, I started putting it up on my Insta.
Yeah.
And I started. I mean, there are inquiries and there are people who want to buy it. And there have been people who bought it, not just in India, but some in the US. And it's great.
Do you sometimes feel that it's also the privilege of fame, maybe, that is giving you a platform? Do you feel that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there are so many. For example, Jahangir, okay? Route outside Jahangir. There are such amazing artists. You see all those people who put up their artwork on the streets. Such amazing, beautiful work. But there are only few who get it into Jahangir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I could, people are giving me the attention because I have a name in another field.
True. Yeah.
I think Emmy had a big part to play with me selling my first 2-3 paintings.
Yeah.
Because news, because they were, you know, they were interested in seeing what this person does.
Mm.
Otherwise, you see so many people, there are so many artists and who are so prolific. I mean, it is an advantage.
Especially with you saying that, I think, you know what, like, it's your humility that really drives your work. Because the fact that you acknowledge it, that takes you very far. Like, my parents always say, be humble, whatever happens, just be humble. I think that is the beautiful quality that you have, which makes you forward.
I'm brutally honest. Not put up a facade. I do not have any interest in pretenses. And honestly, I mean, I love the love and affection and respect I get from y'all, from the audience. But otherwise, I'm very happy, you know, going back and doing my work and going back home and doing my painting, whatever, So anything, not for the news of it, really. But not the final result of it. I do it because I love it. I have to do it. That's it. It's as simple as that. Phir uska kya hoga? Bhagwan dekhe. Wo baad mein dekhenge. Pehle karna hai to wo kar. And what is the thing? Fail hoge na. Usse zyada to kuch nahi hoga. Starting as a student, starting as a child in something, as a novice, you're going to fall. You're going to falter. It's fine. You'll fall. You'll scrape your knee. You'll put a bandage and you'll move on.
Absolutely. Have you yet made any commission work for someone? Like, has someone asked you to?
They recently asked me about a commission work, but because, you know, I'm so busy. This is the first time in my career that I'm jumping from one set to another. I've never done this. I'm really busy and I cannot complain. I am very lucky. I'm finally getting the kind of due that I've wanted, or let's say the kind of work I've aspired to do all my life. I'm playing central characters, I'm playing my age, I'm playing directors are ready to put a film or a show or something on my shoulder and trust me, so it's great. So somebody did recently ask me about it, but I haven't yet done it.
Right. You've not been able to confirm on it, basically. Like,
No. And I won't confirm. It's time. And I cannot just give a commitment.
Yeah.
You know, this commissioning workbook, I don't know how it functions, but the way I understand it in my limited knowledge is that I'd have to sit with the person and understand where we both reach in terms of what the person wants and what I want. And look, very honestly, right now, the work I have done, like I said very honestly right at the beginning, is I chose art also because I didn't have to keep waiting to get offered something.
Right.
You know, in films or shows, you have to wait to get that right role.
Yeah.
Painting, it's your choice. You create what you want to create. It may be seen, not seen. It may be liked, not liked. Well, that's a chance. And that's exactly how I'm functioning.
You, for one person, are entirely disrupting that barrier of age associated with a particular field of any sort, because whether it was going to art school or whether it was taking on main roles, and there may, like, you know, often, unfortunately, in this industry, certain roles, especially with females, is associated only until a particular age, and it's such a sad prejudice or barrier. I don't know, it's everything. You were completely redefining it. How does that feel? Is it too much pressure?
No. I have no onus of changing the world. There's no pressure on me. The OTT has made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Also, now everyone's realizing that it's content driven. And in my life, professionally, Delhi crime really made the shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
That being, you know, reinforced with the Emmy. But Delhi crime really made the shift.
Even before you got the Emmy, were you sure of what you'd done, the work that you'd done for Delhi crime? You were very...
The day I said yes to DC, the day I said yes to Rishi Mehta, he met me in the first 5 minutes. He just talked to me. He did not narrate or anything. He just talked to me about it. I said yes. I read the scripts. He had given me 10 episodes. I told him, give me 2-3 days because there were 10. He had this big a script. So I said, give me 2-3 days to read it. I read it in one go in 2.5 hours because I couldn't stop. I called him and I said, and from then, at that moment, I was involved, period.
Yeah.
We didn't know where it was going to go. We did not know. We did not have Netflix on board. We did not have the Sundance Festival on board. We didn't have anything on board. Yeah. We just, and then just, which you can make out when you see DC. It is just a labor of insane passion.
Absolutely.
And that is, so I didn't know where it was going to go. And honestly, I was like, acha, okay, theek hai, whatever. But just making it, oof, it was just amazing.
How much is storytelling important to you, whether it is through art or whether it is through, because you've done this beautiful canvas of chaos, the mind and chaos.
Right.
How much is storytelling important to you? Either through
that painting is exactly my brain. That is exactly my brain. That is how my brain functions. It's all like a mishmash with different connections. Some fuse out and some just catch fire, and then you, that's how my brain functions. But you know, the thing is with art, which I've always understood, yes, when you go to a gallery, you see and it visually appeals to you, or you go to a gallery, you see something, it visually appeals to you, and then you read what is written.
Yeah.
And then you start pursuing or reading or gathering more information about the artist and his history and where is this coming from. Like when I go to a gallery, it's not just about watching. I want to read. I want to know what is the thought behind it.
Yeah.
But art is subjective. So whatever story I may be telling may not be a story that you're understanding.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. So, you know, a big, big chunk, like one of my favorite things to do in art is perspective. Favorite. I love it. And I love doing
perspectives. Right. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of my artwork is perspective.
Yeah.
And that kind of, it's because it's not about what I went out to create. Finally, when a painting is hanging in somebody's wall, it's not just about that moment, what I was thinking when I created it.
Hmm.
Then it matters. The charm of perspective is that, or a painting is that, as you grow older, your perception to it will change.
Right.
Your understanding of it will change. Hmm. And forget with your age. You change the lighting and the painting will look different.
Yeah.
You change the of that painting and it will look different. That's the beauty, and that's what perspective is about.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not complete. I make my painting with my thought in mind, very nice. But it only gets completed when there is the audience or the viewer's, you know, thought and feeling and story that marries it.
Vegetarians in India. My best friend turned into one for ethical reasons, or rather because she was scarred into it when she went with her parents to the butchers as a child. Apart from her, I only know vegetarians who are so due to religious reasons. And as far as being vegan or veganism is concerned, I see more people actually jump on board the fad without understanding it. Which is why chefs face the problem of a vegan dish, but you know, XYZ ingredient chalega. It's a little more clear and strict in the West, maybe as it should be. Here's what HT Brunch columnist V. Sanghvi has to say about vegetarianism and veganism.
In India, we tend to think of vegetarianism and veganism as being roughly the same thing. It's not. But let me first deal with vegetarianism. There are many, many vegetarians in India, but the overwhelming majority of these vegetarians are not vegetarians because of some well thought out intellectual argument. They were usually brought up as vegetarians and are repulsed by the idea of eating meat, or they have religious compunctions that prevent them from eating meat. I have no problem with that. All respect for religion, all respect for your habits. There is also a smallish group of people who've turned vegetarian on ethical grounds. Now, there is a strong case for vegetarianism. Nobody would deny it. But it depends essentially on arguing that all life is not equal, that plants are a lesser form of life and it's okay to kill them, whereas animals and fish are a higher form of life and it's not okay to kill them. That for me is a problem. And even if you were to take the line that eating only plants is fine because you're not going to kill anything, you are really, because every bit of wheat or rice you eat has usually been made using pesticides, which have killed innumerable life forms in the process. And when you plow the earth, when you do any kind of agriculture, you disturb hiding places of earthworms, of all kinds of animals which die. So are you going to now say that it's okay to be vegetarian because of respect for life, but it's okay if some people die? I'm not sure that's right. However, the case for veganism is stronger and it's different. It's a case based on loving the planet, on arguing that as long as we rear animals, the planet is in danger. Thus, for a vegan, the rearing of a cow is the problem, not the eating of it. So therefore, if you have milk, ghee, cheese, dahi, whatever, you're pretty much as guilty as a guy who enjoys a beefsteak. Now, in the West, veganism is on the rise. Vegetarianism is a little complicated. And I wonder, are we going to think about veganism? Is it ever going to become an option in India? We sort of make a virtue out of necessity when we claim moral superiority for vegetarianism, because we've not really thought it out. But isn't it time we think about veganism? Because that's the one that really makes sense.
I've come across multiple people who've been talking about the anxiety they are feeling and the panic attacks they're going through each day due to the pandemic, irrespective of whether they've lost someone close to them or not. I myself don't know how the heck we're going to get out of this. As a country, I'm not sure where we stand, what with basic facilities just, you know, not within the reach of the aam aadmi, or how the vaccination drive is going given the dearth of vaccines. And let's not forget the side effects of the vaccine as well. I mean, there's just too much of doomsday in the air. And while it is important to stay updated with the latest figures, stats and lockdown restrictions, I've taken to just getting my information from my parents. I mean, that's the best way I can think of when it comes to staying calm in these turbulent times. Here's what HT Brunch columnist Seema Goswami has to say about it.
On the 3rd of May, Delhi recorded 448 deaths from COVID. One of them was my brother-in-law. The end came when we were on a video call with my sister. We saw him struggling for breath, even as she kept increasing the levels of his oxygen concentrator. And then suddenly, he just stopped breathing. And all we could hear on the call were my sister's heartbreaking sobs of anguish and disbelief. We stayed on the call for a couple of hours after that, trying to comfort her. But what comfort can you offer a wife who has seen her husband pass away before her eyes? There are no words. There is no comfort to offer. Instead, there is just a piercing loneliness. That is the nature of death in the times of COVID. You die alone, and those that are left behind mourn alone. And that, sadly, is the story in all too many households at this terrible, terrible time. I don't know how we get through this, how we get to the light at the end of this tunnel. But try we must, because there really is no other option.
An Indian classical musician and a Kathak dancer, Shivali Bhamar, is a multi-talented Indian settled in London. I came across her Instagram account quite recently and intrigued me enough to reach out to her to play a little something for you guys. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi, this is Shivali Bhamar, known as Shivali, playing you Achyutam Keshavam from my first album, The Bhajan Project. So start dancing, have fun and get devotional.
Achyutam Keshavam Krishna Damodaram Hirame Narayanam Janaki Vallabham. Achyutam Keshavam Krishna Damodaram Hirame Narayanam Janaki Vallabham. Kone kehte hai Bhagavan
Sunday brunch. Stay safe.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HT Smartcast.